listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about startups with special guest, Tracy Osborne. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is sponsored by Soulspace. Soulspace is a 10-year-old web development firm with experience in the most challenging of project settings. Soulspace builds versatile tools that elegantly meet complex needs. Soulspace happily serves mom-and-pop shops and Fortune 100 multinational organizations with equal ease, effectiveness, respect, and craftsmanship. Visit soulspace.com to find out more.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor of the year. Hi, Leah. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. So I know that the last time we talked, you were getting ready to head to Portland for Expression Engine Conference and Refresh Portland. How did everything go?
It was really great. I thought that Brad Parscale and team did a great job running the conference, considering it was his first conference. Mm-hmm. So everything ran really smoothly, and it was great to see the gang back together again. It always feels a little bit like family reunion-ish whenever the Expression Engine community gets together. So I also came away with stuff that I could work on right away too. And so whenever I go to conferences, I don't really expect to say learn, you know, something brand new perhaps, but perhaps getting reminders from people what you should be doing, or even just best practices over how they run their business or their development. And that was always, you know, really good.
Mm-hmm. And what was the highlight for you? I mean, other than seeing everyone.
Something just specifically, I thought Matt Weinberg's talk on SEO stuff was really good. That comes to mind immediately because I immediately emailed you right after saying, we need to do this.
Right.
So whenever there's something that's actionable, I think is always really useful. So that came out of, you know, my mind that I thought, wow, I'm really glad I went to that talk.
And how about the Refresh Portland, where you gave your branding presentation?
Well, Refresh Portland was really great. It was a small little meetup, about maybe like 16 people. But I really liked that because I was able to have a lot more interaction and a lot more discussion this time around. And I really made an effort to make sure that this time around, this presentation was less of talking at people. I think it made it a much, much better experience. I also broke into song.
So. No kidding. Did you really?
Yes. Because the title of the presentation is called Getting to Know Brand You.
Oh my God, you sang that song.
And I sang Getting to Know You from The King and I.
Oh no, I really wish I'd been able to go.
Yeah. So, and I sang it with a British accent and everything too. So not even like just singing it normally. I had to, you know, do it in Deborah Kerr's voice. But, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Good. Well, I'm glad you had a chance to go out there. I had my kind of round of conferences earlier this year, and it's the same for me. I always walk away feeling engaged and inspired and just, you know, little ideas of things that I can do. It's always worth it, conferences, I think.
Yeah.
Well, at least the ones I've been to. I haven't yet been to a really bad one.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, a lot of that is dependent on who goes, I think, too. And everyone at the EE conference and Refresh Portland were fantastic.
Fantastic. Well, let's get to some news.
Sure.
Let's start with, well, we've got a little bit of news in our neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. You and I are starting a business blog series on emilylewisdesign.com. Mm-hmm. And you wrote the first post, and it went out live last week, where you talked about the process of getting your visa so that you could come live and work in the United States.
Yep. And for those just tuning in to Control Click, our very first episode talked about how we started working together and we promised that we'd be writing about it. So,
yay, we did what we promised.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's out. And if you want to find out more about how we run our business, make sure you subscribe to emilylewisdesign.com and we'll get more good stuff out for you.
Yeah, it'll be great. So there's also a bit of news in the world of content management systems.
Yes. Before we get into that, I just want to mention that we are just having news based on the CMSs that we are actively following or using, and try to keep it to major updates. So if there's like a tiny little build update, we won't really necessarily mention that. But if you think as a listener that we overlooked something, please let us know at controlclickcast.com/contact, and we'll be sure to get it on our radar.
Absolutely. So the first bit of news is from Ellis Lab. Expression Engine version 1 support is ending this December on the 7th. Mm-hmm. So if you're maintaining EE version 1 site, you might want to start looking to see if there's anything you need help with right now.
Yeah, or if there's an opportunity for an upgrade path, et cetera. It's going to be a little difficult, I think, for
some sites. If you haven't upgraded, there's a reason why you haven't upgraded.
Yeah. For sure.
Just the complexity of it or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And in other CMS news, Kraft seems to be building up to something big for November. They had a post on Pixel and Tonic called Psst. And then there is a picture of Guy Fawkes on the front page of Pixel and Tonic. So I'm guessing that means there's going to be a, quote, revolutionary release on November 5th. And for those that don't know what we're talking about, I think most geeks will recognize that it's from history as well as, what's that movie?
V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta. So yeah, awesome movie. If you don't know anything about that, we'll link to the Wikipedia explanation in the show notes.
All right. Well, let's get to today's episode. We're talking about funding and maintaining startups with Tracy Osborne. Tracy is a designer, developer, and speaker. She's also the founder of Wedding Lovely, a subscription-based wedding planning service, and one of the F11 class of 500 startups. Welcome to the show, Tracy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Tracy, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure thing. I mean, you kind of ran over the basics in the intro. I started out as a designer and then I picked up programming. And so now I've been calling myself a designer developer, which is still blowing my mind being a designer for so long. Because development seemed like it was like this really, really hard thing to get into. Now I've kind of officially added to my title, which is just kind of amazing. And then from California, but right now I'm actually traveling through Europe. So I kind of took about 1/4 of the year off to kind of work and travel, which has been kind of fun.
Oh, that's fantastic. Speaking of Europe, like, what brought you there? What are you up to?
I mean, it was like, you know, put my house, the place I'm renting, I was able to rent it out on Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. I love that service.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then I went to Europe and they were renting places in Europe to, you know, so it actually works out better because I live in California. So rent prices are through the roof. So I was able to rent my place for a good amount of money. So I'm kind of saving money by being Europe. Imagine that.
That's kind of an odd statement, actually.
I know. I've been through Brussels and a bunch of Germany and right now I'm in Prague. So it's been a really good time.
Was it just something you wanted to kind of change your environment, or was there a conference that you wanted to be sure you could attend?
I've actually missed a bunch of conferences, including one of my favorite conferences in the whole world, which is Brooklyn Beta. I missed a bunch by traveling. I considered flying in just for that one, but then I realized the plane tickets would be too expensive. But I mean, really, it's founding, you know, Wedding Lovely. I've actually been able to travel while working on it, which has been awesome. And so I want to take advantage of that fact. Say if I was working a, you know, quote unquote real job with, you know, hours and you have to go into an office and whatnot, I wouldn't have this opportunity. So it felt like the best time to go out and see the world while working. And something I need to do sooner rather than later.
So let's start at the very beginning.
Sure.
How you got to this point. So we talked about how you started your career as a designer. So before we get into how you got into development, tell us a bit about your design roots and how you got started on the web.
Sure. I made my first website when I was 12, which is
cool.
You know, 90 sometime. I'm not going to do math right now. And this is, you know, the days of doing table websites, and it was very, very new. I discovered when I was 12 and all throughout high school that it was the fastest way of getting an easy A in any kind of project for high school because everyone's like, oh, a website. You made a website for your project. So just like A's throughout high school because I was just making websites for all my classes. And I had this idea that, oh, because I can do websites. Oh, I can totally program. No, HTML, CSS is, well, CSS didn't exist then. So HTML is nothing like programming. But I went into computer science at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. This is my first foray into development, and computer science at the time was teaching Java, which most developers, I tell them that fact and they go, oh, Java is not a great language. And I hated it. I couldn't figure it out. I mean, I remember my one of my second quarter classes, we started talking about GUIs, and everything up until this point is an all command line. So I started doing GUIs, which are graphical user interfaces. And I had this like, oh, this is what I'm good at. I actually like making interface, which is what the class wasn't about at all. I made it through over a year of computer science. And again, I thought I hated it and I didn't ever want to do programming again. And so I switched over to graphic design. And I finished up my degree in graphic design. I was going to be a product designer. I wanted to work on wine labels. But the year before I graduated, a friend of mine had a startup and literally a bunch of guys working in a garage. And he was like, okay, I know you can still do web design. And I didn't actually know CSS at this point, even though CSS had been around for a few years. And but they said, like, you can do some kind of web design, you can do graphic design. How about you come work with us before you finish up college at this quote-unquote startup, bunch of dudes in a garage working on this website. And I thought it was going to be temporary. I ended up working with them for 4.5 years. They moved from the garage into an office in Foster City in the Bay Area. And then right before I left them, I moved into a giant office in San Mateo. So they're doing very well. And it was this really great, like, I guess a kind of a startup intro for me because I didn't have I had to teach myself web design when I was there. I taught myself CSS. I taught myself how to do web design, how to do conversion testing, how to do SEO. It was this SEO, very SEO focused company. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of being thrown into this world. And I had no one above me to teach me anything, which was kind of actually really, really fun. And I liked having that control. So after 4.5 years, I kind of realized that I wanted even more control. I didn't want to have a company on my head. So I left them. I did some freelancing for web design for a while. And then I decided to just start my own company and try to jump into that. So that's kind of how it kind of all grew together.
When you say start your own company, you're talking about Wedding Lovely.
Yeah, kind of. So the first prototype, I guess, the first version of Wedding Lovely is actually called Wedding Type. Like, I want to say something about weddings. It's funny because I looked in weddings. A lot of people are like, oh, you must be married, which I'm not married. Like, oh, you must like really love weddings and want to be a wedding planner, which is not true. Yeah, it can be kind of crazy. The designer, I love wedding invitations. I thought wedding invitations are just gorgeous. There are these pieces of print design that have so much tradition and importance around them. And so Wedding Type, I wanted to make it easier for people to make their own wedding invitations because there's a lot of people out there who don't have a lot of skills in that area, but they're still making their own invitations. And I saw a lot of these and they're usually like Times New Roman or, Curls or something like that. So the very first iteration of my company was building an online kind of like typography for wedding invitations. So a person can put in what they want, their size, and it would format it in a very nice way so they can be outputted as PDF and printed. Now, this is all theoretical. This is what I wanted to build. This never actually happened. I found a co-founder who can program. I was doing design. We applied for YC and got Y Combinator. And got an interview, didn't get it in, and just immediately after not making it into Y Combinator, co-founder and I realized that things weren't working out, so he left. And so then I'm stuck with this very ambitious idea, but no code really, and no knowledge on how to program. That was at the point where I said, okay, you know what, I'm just going to learn how to program, and I'm going to build my own startup. And I couldn't build that very ambitious idea, because doing like perfect typography outputted as a PDF is very, very difficult. I decided to switch it to something a lot more simpler, which is a place to showcase really great wedding invitation designers on a directory, which is a lot easier to build to be a programmer. So that is weddinginvitelove.com. So it's a wedding invitation designer directory, which still exists now. that was the very first thing I ever launched. And now Wedding Lovely is officially 8 different websites, a bunch of different directories, and a bunch of other things too. But that's and I had to change the name of the company from Wedding Type to Wedding Lovely when we moved out of doing just invitations into supporting wedding planners and wedding photographers, wedding venues and whatnot.
Wow. So when you decided to teach yourself to program, what did you start with?
I was still like a little bit scarred from Java. And luckily I started dating someone, and he's still my partner today, but he's a really great Python programmer. And so he kind of just started showing me a little bit of why Python is a lot easier to pick up, because it's a very clean and beautiful language, and it's so much nicer than Java. It's not even funny how much nicer it is. It's so much easier to pick up. I didn't try to understand all of Python, and Django is the specific platform that I'm using. And I didn't try to learn all of it. I launched about 6 weeks after I decided to learn programming. Mm-hmm. And I basically, you know, got this like very, very, very simple MVP version of the website out, which was quite fun. It's more fun, I find, to have a live working website out there that people can use. Kind of really inspired me to keep working on it. And this was just a side project at this point. But I use Python and Django, and I know a lot of people like Rails. I've tried learning Rails, and I don't know it still, but I still find Python a really, really great language to learn.
How long did it take you to feel, or maybe to build your most, for lack of a better word, tangible thing? Like, what was the learning curve for you, the time frame?
So, I mean, the tangible thing, the first version of Wedding Invite Love launched 6 weeks. I would still consider myself barely knowing anything, but I did get something out there.
That's cool.
So that was really great. And then it's just became an iterative process where, you know, people I worked with would ask for features. So either a vendor, wedding invitation vendor, or a user would be like, hey, I really think you should do this. And then I would learn more Python and Django by building that feature. So I have to do a lot of Googling on how to do something like that. And then I try to hack it together and see if it worked. But during this process, essentially teaching myself Django and Python while working on Wedding Lovely. So it took 6 weeks for the first product to launch. I kept iterating on that. And then the big turning point is this second major product. I'll consider the first major product today is a vendor directory, which Wedding Lovely has 8 of those now. And then the second major product is weddinglovely.com. And this was launched about 2 years after I did Wedding Invite Love. And what weddinglovely.com is, it's like an online planning and guidance app. So someone can put in their wedding date and, you know, they're looking for an eco-friendly wedding, and then they live in San Jose, California. And then it kind of creates a little plan for wedding planning. So they can say, okay, I am 8 months out. These are things that I need to have done, be doing it, you know, immediately. These are things I can just wait on. So find your photographer and venue first, work on other things later. And it was my goal to kind of build something so people can, you know, have a plan for wedding planning. Because it's kind of really involved and kind of a scary process, because there's so many like pieces you have to put together. And building that was a lot more complicated than building a directory, because I'm working with customers with all their information, and I had to build this, like, if this person is in this place of wedding planning, then it needs to surface up this template. And then the person needs to be able to mark the template as like, they don't need that template anymore. And it was very complicated. When I worked on it, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much easier. And I realized how much at that point that I learned Python and Django, and it was kind of like a, and I think at that point, that's when I changed my Twitter description, because it used to say designer and front end developer. And when I did that, I kind of realized myself that I could change it to designer and developer, taking out the front end. And I remember doing that, being like, oh my gosh, I actually am a developer. So it's been 3 years of working on Wedding Lovely now, and I can still consider myself an intermediate programmer. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that I'm very happy with where I am right now. It's really, really fun.
So you're talking about Python and Django. Do you have any specific resources or tools that helped you hone your skills?
Yeah, there is two places that exist that I used. One is called Learn Python the Hard Way, which is the title's kind of,
it's kind of intimidating there.
It's actually like Learn It the Easy Way. It's a very, very simple like introduction into programming logic. So I needed that refresher, because there was logic in Java, and I kind of had a knowledge about how for loops and if statements worked, but it was my refresher into learning how that works in Python. Mm-hmm. And it's free online. I think you can buy a book. Highly recommend it. And then the second thing I used at the time was a tutorials. I think it's called Getting Started with Django by Kenneth Love. And he's currently working on a video series rehashing those tutorials. So it's a good intro into Django and how Django works in terms of building a web app. So the third thing also is that, yeah, this didn't exist then because I'm hoping to build a introduction to Python and Django for web designers. And so I'm actually working on a book right now. I'm shopping around for publishers, which is a little scary, but taking the knowledge that I learned from learning Python and Django, I find that, you know, a lot of tutorials out there that are for Python and Django for building web app are kind of based on other programmers. And so they kind of jump into all these big programming terms. That's very confusing to, say, a web designer like I was. And so I'm kind of creating right now a tutorial to help web designers pick up programming, and that kind of speaks the web designer language. So that's not out yet, but that's what I'm hoping to work on, kind of help more people to go through the same process I did.
Since you went through this process and you seem to really like it, the evolution of your skills, is it something you would recommend to any web designer to pick up programming?
I find a lot of web designers, and I especially did, a lot, you know, you work on the web and you keep being like, I wish this product existed. You know, I have these constant ideas of things that should exist. And the fun thing is that if you pick up programming, you can build it. You can build the things that you wish exist. And it's actually quite fun because then you know, as a web designer, you know, you control only the front end interface. But then when you pick in programming, and then you control the whole thing, the whole interaction. It was really exciting for me to build this full system where, you know, not only was I building what people were using on the front end, but actually seeing, you know, building the actual web app themselves. Mm-hmm. So if any web designer out there had these ideas for something they can build, I would totally recommend learning Python and Django and that, or another Rails and Ruby or another language that's out there. Because it's so much fun to actually build a web app, I find at least very, very fun. And it allowed me to not do any like full-time freelancing anymore. I turned it into my full-time job. I mean, I don't make that much money, but I'm in Europe right now and I'm able to travel with it, which is awesome. So if anyone has the idea of it, maybe jumping in and learning programming, then I say totally go for it.
I have a question about startups and the basic definition of them. What defines a startup? And I guess my point of reference is both Leigh and I have had our own businesses. Are those considered startups? What's the difference between a self-independent employed person and a startup?
I actually have no idea. It comes down to what you want to call yourself. I don't know if I'm a startup anymore. It is a kind of a buzzwordy term that you kind of think of the Silicon Valley startup that's raising millions of dollars and that's going to, you know, either flame out in 1 year or sell to a bigger company for, you know, $100 million in 2 years or something like that, which, I mean, it seems like both of our companies don't really fit that definition, but who knows? Maybe it's a inspirational term, you know, all those like ideas, being very excited about building something. I mean, I guess I don't know, but, you know, whatever you want to call yourself.
Having been a freelancer for a period of time versus what you have done with Wedding Lovely, are there any differences or benefits that having the startup that you didn't have when you were freelancing?
It's funny because in both cases, I'd say I'd be working with quote unquote clients. When I was a web designer, I was working with someone, but say it's building something that they're building themselves. So, I mean, as a web designer, someone has an idea for building a to-do app. And so I'd be helping them build the front end interface for it. So I'm kind of helping them achieve their vision, whereas now it's my vision and I can work on what I want to build. And, you know, I have a lot of people who can email me saying, hey, I really think Wedding Lovely should do this or support this, whatnot. But I have like the choice in whether I really want to jump into doing that. And sometimes I do. It's really great actually to get a customer emailing me with like, hey, I really think you're missing this. And I can actually whip it up that night. And I send an email the next day and be like, hey, it's actually live. And they're like, oh, this is awesome. It's more control. And I think it's really fun having able to like pick and choose what I want to work with or what kind of features or where I want to grow.
It really feels like pursuing your passion when you had this idea. But I feel like in the world of startups, it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. Do you find startups have more people pursuing a passion for an idea, or is it really a passion for entrepreneurship in general?
I mean, it depends on the idea. The funny thing is that, again, a lot of people ask me, like, why are you in weddings? You must love weddings. And a lot of it's I want to change the world of weddings and make them simpler and a little bit less insane. I love working with wedding vendors, especially small business and local wedding vendors and people who are kind of, it's hard for them to get marketing or get out there because they're just like another one person working on their company. Mm-hmm. Both are very important. And if you don't have the passion for entrepreneurship to do a startup, you're obviously not going to get very far. I was working with someone before and it didn't work out because it felt like that person really needed to have their strengths of having a company around them, a lot of stability. So you need to have like this ability to be like, I'm going to be, you know, without stability and without a lot of rules and be able to be kind of work a lot in a lot freer and maybe a lot scarier environment. Also important to be really interested in the idea that you're working on, because that's where I think a lot of the creativity comes from. If you are not interested in the idea, you're not going to be passionate about figuring out what is missing from that field. And so I find that a lot actually with weddings. I run into a lot of people who look into weddings. I talk with a lot of startups and they look into weddings like, oh, people spend so much money here. I'm going to start a startup here because people spend money. It's going to be so easy to make money. And I can kind of tell they're not interested in the idea of the weddings world themselves. They're interested in making money. Mm-hmm. And sure. More times than not, these startups stop existing after a year because they find out it's a lot harder. It's not just like money's being thrown at them. Sure. It's a lot harder to make money. And then they go under. So, I mean, when Wedding Lovely kind of was launching, there was probably, say, 8 or so different startups at the same time. They're all starting at the same time. And majority of those don't exist anymore. And I think that from meeting a lot of those people, one of the problems might have been that the founders were more into it for money than being really passionate about the idea themselves. Mm.
So speaking of money, when you were coming up with, first of all, these directories you mentioned, and then Wedding Lovely, like, where did you get the money to pay for, I mean, ultimately your time, but then anything else you needed to do?
Well, luckily, so like I said, I had that one job that I worked for 4.5 years. And when I got the idea that maybe I wanted to go do something on my own, I started saving money. So I had about $20,000 saved up by the time that I left that job, which is kind of hard to do when I only had, let's see, I was only making about $50,000 a year. So it took me a few years to get to that point. But I left that job with a nest egg saying, okay, I have more or less half a year to a year, depending on how I save and scrimped, to have something happen. And the second thing is that when I launched Wedding Invite Love, that first directory, I was still doing part-time freelancing, so I could still earn money. And so I had that kind of a backup in case things didn't work out. And so once Wedding Invite Love, I launched paid profiles, and once Wedding Invite started growing, I was able to cut back more and more on the freelancing. And then the big turning point was when I was accepted into the 500 Startups Accelerator and the, like you mentioned, the fall 2011 batch. Mm-hmm. And I had my one and only investment, which is $50,000 for a piece of my company to be inside the accelerator. So at that point, I was able to stop all freelancing and just live off of that investment.
Can you describe 500 Startups a little bit for our listeners?
Sure thing. It's like, it's a startup accelerator. So it's kind of like summer school for startups. It's a, you know, I forget how many companies, it must have been something like 20 or so companies in Mountain View, California. And we all came together for a 3-month time where there's kind of like classes going on every day. So every single day there was some kind of event. They'd bring in a speaker and the speaker would talk about SEO or talk about conversion or talk about design. And so you can attend these sessions, kind of all work together in this big room on your startup. And at the end of 3 months, then we have this thing called demo day. So you kind of debut what you've been working on for the last 3 months to we had 3 demo days. So rooms of investors with the hopes of raising a seed round between $500 and $1 million or more, depending on how awesome we were. I ended up not raising money, which was not a reflection on 500 Startups themselves. I had the opportunity, but it's other than that, the program was really, really great for me to meet other people in the startup world. And it's also kind of like a stamp of approval for your company when you're accepted into a program like this, because people will say, okay, 500 Startups likes you. That must mean your company is really great. And so it kind of opened up a lot of doors.
So you had to come to 500 Startups with your idea first.
So I got a little bit lucky. Before 500 Startups, I was accepted into a program called, I guess it's a little bit different now, but it's called the Designer Fund. They're kind of looking for designer founders that they could support and kind of help them grow their companies, because designer founders are very, very rare. because usually, you know, when it comes to startups, it's usually, you know, you have like the CEO, the marketer type person, the CTO, the programmer type person. And so designers have been kind of traditionally left out of that equation. So I joined the Designer Fund, which is an awesome program. And now they're working on a thing called Bridge. So they're a little bit different. The Designer Fund has a lot of connections with 500 startups. One of the founders of Designer Fund used to work with 500 startups. And so when I was accepted into that program, I was able to get immediate interview with 500 startups through that. So it kind of opened up. That was the first door that opened up to me. So then I had that interview with 500 startups and they accepted me from that interview into the program, which is also kind of awesome because I'm a solo founder as well. And usually these accelerators, they all look for someone with a partner. Mm-hmm. It was kind of this like really, really great, awesome moment.
You mentioned you were a solo founder and that's less common than someone with a partnership. Do you know why they seek someone with a partnership?
They like to say that the chances of success are higher, which I'm not sure. But when you have a partner with them, with you, especially when you're going through a quote unquote, like real startup, you know, those big, scary, exciting ones where like every day is a little bit different. Like one day it's amazing and everything's going great. And the other day, oh, everything's going horribly. I lost these customers. The company's going to fail. And so it's like this giant roller coaster. I mean, if you have someone going along that roller coaster with you, it makes it just so much better because you have someone to talk to and understands. There's also, you know, when you're kind of a partner, you're sharing the workload. And so if someone can work on the marketing, you know, while the other person's working on the programming, work together, you theoretically get a lot more work done. Like I said, I decided to just do it myself. And so I kind of just started doing marketing, programming, designing all by myself. And I've been open to the idea of a co-founder. But the other problem is that it's hard to find, say, a quote-unquote co-founder when they haven't started the company with you from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to feel like a founder or something when it's already been existing for 3 years underneath another person. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason why I'm still continuing to be a solo founder. And sometimes I wish I had a co-founder or whatnot, but other times, you know, I've gotten so far on my own and I really like doing things myself. Sure. You know, maybe I kind of like controlling it. Like it's kind of a theme. So kind of happy with how things have gone. You know, and I got into 500 Startups without a co-founder, which is great. And there's a few other startups in there without a co-founder, including a couple other women-run startups that had no co-founder, which is even more rare. So it was actually really great to find other people like there in that program who are like me.
I'm curious about that initial investor who invested, what, $50,000 you mentioned towards Wedding Lovely?
Yeah, that's 500 Startups themselves.
Yeah. So how does that deal work? So they give you $50,000. How do they expect to get a return on their investment?
So it's essentially $50,000 for 5% the company. And that's their standard term deal with almost everybody, mm-hmm. which was, you know, it's actually a really great deal because technically, you know, an imaginary world, this values a company at $1 million, which still blows my mind. So they officially own 5% of Wedding Lovely. At that point, I had to get Wedding Lovely Incorporated, which is a whole nother business, and get lawyers and all this other stuff. And then in terms of getting a return on investment, they're just hoping they get a return. We actually went through an almost acquisition with Etsy a while ago. So that would have been really good for Wedding. That's pretty much when they get the return on investment, is if you get an acquisition, which is a lot more likely than the other alternative, which is an IPO. Mm-hmm. So they kind of hope for those events for the company to get big enough and more, it's most important enough that it gets acquired or IPOs, and then they get their money back, hopefully with 2, 3, 10, whatever times their original investment, which is one reason why 500 Startups has such a rigorous application process, because they're trying to, you know, they're not going to invest with anybody. They're going to try and invest that money with people they really think is going to succeed.
Now, when it came to the process of getting the investment, like, did you actually have to talk to them about financial things, or were you able to just keep your focus on what your area of expertise is?
Thankfully, like I said, I got lawyers, and I got an introduction to my lawyers, which is Gunderson in the Bay Area, through 500 Startups. Once I started working with Gunderson, they were able to take over the most of the process because they're actually 500 Startups lawyers as well. And I had to sign some things saying that's okay. They're not going to, you know, it's not going to be in conflict. That meant that they could set up most of the paperwork for me. And so I would just get emails from them saying, okay, now is the time you need to sign these papers for incorporation or these papers for the investment. And they usually ran down the details with me, which is really great. And then mine was a little bit more complicated. And again, they took care of most of this, which is awesome because oddly, wedding type the previous company was an LLC, and then I was going to be building Wedding Lovely Incorporated, which is a C Corp. And so instead of just transferring one to another, because Wedding Type was an LLC in California, and then Wedding Lovely is going to be a corporation in Delaware, oddly, they set it up so Wedding Lovely Corporation bought out Wedding Type, the LLC. So I had to put all these, I had to sign all these papers for like a merger and all these kind of things. And then Wedding Type LLC had to be officially like closed down as a company. And then Wedding Lovely is the one that existed at the end. So at one point I had two companies and one bought out the other company, which is very strange.
you mentioned Delaware. I'm curious, were you formed as an S Corp in Delaware because of the tax benefits that Delaware offers, or it just happened to be Delaware?
It's actually C Corp in Delaware. And this is, again, another place where I'm very happy to have lawyers, because I know there is a reason why you incorporate in Delaware. It has to do with taxes, or it has to do also with the way Delaware's is set up. All I know is that it's advantageous to be in Delaware, and that's where they recommend everyone to incorporate that. And so I was like, okay, sounds good to me.
Interesting. In regards to like getting funding, et cetera, now that you have the knowledge that you have, would you have done anything differently in regards to getting money? Because there seems to be this movement towards bootstrapping versus getting funding versus whatever. And there's certain amounts of freedom by just, you know, using your own money. And you did save up your own money, but would you have tried to get money now that you know what you have?
Most people usually just like do solely bootstrapping, or they do solely raising money. So after they get like their initial investment, then they go and raise a seed, and they go raise, you know, a Series A. Well, I kind of did a little bit of both. I raised that initial $50,000 from 500 Startup, and all indications were pushing me into doing a Series A and et cetera. But I decided to stop and bootstrap instead. And there's a couple of reasons I did that. And I wouldn't change anything, because that 50K was actually very helpful. And I'm very happy that 500 Startups has been okay with me not raising more money, because it's allowed me, again, control. It seems to be a theme here. When I don't have investors who are kind of like really looking for a return on the investment, they're very involved, which would happen to say if I raise a Series A, because they would get more involved, and then you'd have a board of directors and people owning more and more parts of the company, and they can tell you what to do. Mm. And with the wedding stuff especially, let's say, for example, when it comes to pulling in vendors, my vendor directories, we do not create accounts for people without them explicitly doing so. So say there's a couple other vendor directories out there that will like create a listing for someone automatically. And then they can say, they find that listing, and there'll be a big button saying, hey, sign up here and you can claim this listing. That's a way you can like make it look like you have thousands to hundreds of thousands profiles on the website without actually these vendors actually signing up for anything. And so that sounds really great, because then you say, oh, I have 10,000 vendors. So it's very important for me though to have these vendors actually apply for their profile on the website, because then I can start a contact with these people, and then I can start working with them towards a paid account or help them build their company or whatnot. And I also wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be initially pissing them off, because it was, you know, sure. You're like, why does this website have my company on it already?
Sure.
And I kept talking to people like, why don't you do this? You'd have so many vendors. You'd have so much more like better metrics for your company. But it felt so slimy, mm-hmm. You know, and make sure that I can do those kind of decisions while having to like argue with someone about it. And then Wedding Lovely at the point already started making money. And I was kind of like, okay, maybe this is actually possible to kind of grow this company using the money from Wedding Lovely and not have to take on investment. So the downside of that is that Wedding Lovely is growing slower than probably would have if I had $1 million investment, because then I can't, you know, if I had $1 million, I can hire, you know, 3 developers and 2 marketers and a bunch of designers and whatnot, and theoretically create this like giant company that could be doing really awesome things and potentially growing faster. But by not raising money, I'm able to grow it in the direction I want to. It's still growing day after day, and I can continue growing the company in a less slimy way than I feel like some...
An ethical way. Speaking of growth and revenue, are you willing to disclose what kind of revenue you're making?
Yeah, I mean, I make between $2,000 and $5,000 per month, depending on what's going on. And I have several different revenue sources, which is really great. Yeah, I work with wedding vendors they sign up for a free account. They have the option of doing a paid account. So a lot of revenue is coming from these vendors who are on paid accounts. WeddingLovely.com, that planning app I mentioned, is also a paid product. People who are on WeddingLovely.com and planning a wedding with us, that's another source of revenue. I don't want to put advertisements on these vendor pages that I work with or on that planning app. I think that's a little bit, you know, And the third source of revenue is our weddings blog. So we actually run advertising on the weddings blog, so I have like sidebar ads and sponsors posts. And it's our only place we do advertising in Wedding Lovely. So not on our vendor directories, nor on our wedding planning app. But that's our third source of revenue. And that's kind of where a lot of the revenue ups and downs come from, depending on how much advertising we sold that month.
So how long did it get to that point where you had some sort of regular source of revenue and profit?
Profit, that's a little more difficult because it all depends on what the expenses. Yeah. Depends on how much I decide to pay myself, which again is still very little. My current salary is $25,000 a year, just a little bit fun to live on sometimes. But in terms of revenue, how long? I mean, it kind of just been growing slowly. The biggest jumps, like I said, one of our sources of revenue is our wedding planning app. So when that launched, that was the jump in terms of revenue, which was really awesome. But in terms of vendors and in terms of the blog, those two sources of revenue, they just kind of been growing slowly over time, kind of corresponds with, say, how much page views and how many vendors and how many people we work with. So which is nice because I can, you know, continue to track that growth upwards, and it's very stable so far.
So I'm curious then, you're talking about your growth. What are your plans for making it grow even further?
I actually have a launch that's going to be happening next Monday.
Ooh.
I wish I could announce it here, but it's going to be a few days after the podcast launch. So that's going to be awesome, but I can't say much. So sure. Check out weddinglovely.com and you can see it if you're curious on Monday. I believe it's November 4th. Mm-hmm. In terms of growth, one of my biggest goals is for vendors, you want to see people's reviews for wedding vendors, and you want to see their previous people that they work with and what they say. There's a lot of websites out there that have vendor listings, but their reviews are all 5 stars. Mm-hmm. Someone leaves a bad review, that vendor complains, usually gets taken off of the website. And so you can only really see positive reviews. And so one of my goals, it's going to be kind of a balancing act, but one of my goals is launching a new review system for wedding vendors. That's going to be a little bit more balanced. And again, the balancing act is that I don't want to, you know, make my vendors mad, because sometimes you just have a really terrible client. That's a terrible client, doesn't understand anything and starts complaining, and it's not actually their fault. That can happen, but I'm working on the system so you can kind of help start picking out some of these poor vendors that are out there. Mm-hmm. Whereas you can also showcase these really, really amazing vendors and have it kind of, this review system hopefully will help people see both of those types of vendors and help them choose. So that's one of the biggest things I've been working on in the back end that hasn't launched yet, but trying to build this like more honest and open review system for wedding vendors.
Do you have any plans for like hiring? I mean, you mentioned you had some part-time people working on your third property, the blog, I think. Do you have any plans to, if you hit a certain benchmark in terms of profit, to bring on a programmer or bring on someone who can focus exclusively on, you know, some other area of the business?
Totally, I'd love to. When I had the 500 startups money, the 50K, I hired someone full-time. So salaried, she was making twice as much as me, which is, again, knowing my tiny salary, that's not that much. And money ran out very quickly when you have a salary person on time. And so she had to be let go, which was a really sad day for Wedding Lovely because she was awesome, but couldn't afford having a full-time person at the time. So then it had to drop down to just me. The company actually went through this scary period where, you know, I had to lay off that person. It was horrible. The company was still kind of losing money. And so we got kind of this like really, really scary point where then finally the finances stabilized and started going upwards again. So for a while, it was just me on this very tiny salary, making sure the company didn't go under. And now it's been growing enough where I can hire 2 part-time people, which is awesome. And I'm hoping that I can continue growing where I can turn one of those part-time people into a full-time employee or start paying myself a little bit more of a reasonable salary. So yeah, totally would love to hire. Just has to wait to that point where I can do so.
With that, I'm wondering, what would you have done differently when starting up your business to help set up for this type of, you know, movement and growth?
I don't know if I would do anything differently because everything I have done has been a lesson.
Yeah.
I'm only at the point where I am right now because I had made, say, what could be called mistakes. But so hiring that one person and then getting the company to a really scary point in terms of finances because the company couldn't support that person without raising money. And then we didn't raise money. That was kind of scary. It taught me a lot about money management, though. And now the company is more even keel and the bank accounts are going upwards rather than downwards. So, I mean, would I say that experience had gone away? If that experience wasn't there, would I really be really where I am right now? I don't know. Everything I've done, there really hasn't been any really horrible, disastrous moments that I would take back. And overall, the whole process of working on Wedding Lovely has been overall positive. And so I don't know if I would take anything back or do anything differently because I've learned so much from working on this.
So it sounds like your definition of success is very holistic. It's maybe not just about profit. So how do you gauge whether you are successful with Wedding Lovely?
As the only full-time employee, this would change if I had other people with me, but as the only full-time employee of Wedding Lovely, it's whether I'm happy with what I'm working on and whether I'm enjoying life right now. You know, because life is really short. Mm. And one of the biggest catalysts for me leaving that full-time job I had is that while I was making money with it and it was kind of exciting, it was also not what I wanted to work on full-time. And I actually really did not like my life at that moment. I was just kind of, I actually almost moved to New Zealand to become a whitewater rafting instructor because I was just like, I'm done with the internet. You know, and I want to do something completely different. As long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing and I'm happy with my life, I consider myself successful. And, you know, the company is still, like I said, it's growing very slowly, but it's growing. So I'm very happy with that. If I had a full-time employee and I had other people working on me whose livelihoods depended on me, then obviously that would change because then I'd be very focused on making sure I did not ruin their life accidentally by under. It's actually a very real fear for me, which was really hard having another person work with me because I'd be like, I can't just make sure that I'm happy. I have to make sure they're happy as well.
Sure.
Right now, it's, you know, very selfishly kind of just whether I'm happy with what I'm working on, whether I feel fulfilled and loving what I'm doing, which so far so good.
Well, I mean, you are in Prague, so hard to complain about that.
As long as I have internet, which is the worst part about traveling while working is sometimes there was one point in Cologne where we got to our apartment and there was no internet. And we were like, you said you had internet. And like, oh, I ordered it, but we don't have it. I have a company to work on.
Yeah, that would be an issue, I think.
Now, Tracy, do you have any resources you can recommend for anyone who's contemplating starting a business, starting up a business, or starting a startup?
One of the best places for startup news and entrepreneurship is what's called Hacker News, and that's run by Y Combinator. So that is news.ycombinator.com. And it's basically a forum/message board where people can post interesting links. And they usually revolve around startups or entrepreneurship or running a company or something like that. And it's very inspiring. There's lots of really great links that show up there on there. So I consider that kind of essential reading for anyone who's working on a startup or running a business. Other than that, you know, this might not be what you asked, but very important is to have a good support system in real life. So you have family and friends and people you can talk to. I say that's crucial for anyone starting a business, and it just make sure you have that first because it can be a very tough journey. And just having a kind of an offline life where you can escape to and people you can talk to and take care of you is very, very important.
That's awesome. That was actually going to be part of my final question, which is what's the final piece of advice? But sounds like having a support system is really important when you're venturing out on your own.
Yeah, my partner/boyfriend, don't know who to call him, he also does startups as well. So I've been able to watch him. He had his company sold to Google a few years ago, and now he's working on a new thing right now. So it's been very inspiring. And having someone going through the exact same thing as I am right now. So that's been crucial for me for feeling like I'm not alone.
It's fantastic. Man, there's just so much more to talk about, but that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Tracy.
Thank you so much for having me.
In case our listeners wanted to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
My personal website is at limedaring.com. So that's kind of where you can see, you know, social media links and all of that. And that's also my Twitter handle. And then Wedding Lovely is no missing consonants or vowels or anything like that. Just weddinglovely.com. And that's my company website.
Perfect. Now we'd like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Soulspace and Pixel and Tonic.
We also want to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when Jonathan Snook will join us to discuss modular CSS. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.